Hello, KSCO Santa Cruz 1080 AM listeners. This is Becca Dukes, and you are listening to another episode of Better by the Minute Life with Becca. Sometimes the brighter side of life includes sharing the dark to allow the bright to be exposed and shine through. Tonight, I am honored to welcome back Jonathan Emord, a leading constitutional law attorney who has been standing up against narratives and exposing what they would rather not have censored for the last 35 years. So many aspects, Jonathan, of what you stand for has just really carried through as to what was intended when our Constitution was written. And I just appreciate everything that I have learned about you, the books that you have written, the cases that you have gone before the courts, where you are just standing for our rights and making sure that we're not overtaken by authoritarians in your fight to do that. And today we're going to be talking critical race theory. I have children in school. You have children in school. Different parts of the country are really pushing the teachings of critical race theory. And I have read things from both sides, and it just blows me away that bits and pieces, and you can go into this better than I as to what critical race theory really is, how it benefits, and how it actually causes more division within our unity. I mean, the United States is like a crock pot of people coming from all around the world, and they're coming here for what? They're coming here because they want freedom. They want to be able to rise up and be the best that they can be without the suppression that they were getting in their own countries. Am I understanding this right, Jonathan?
I think so. Critical race theory is institutionalized racism. It segregates. It does not integrate, and it teaches children that they ought to regard each other differently based on their race, that their race ought to be viewed not as superficial, not as a mere pigment of the skin, which has nothing to do with one's aptitude or ability or willingness to work or achieve. Rather, they look at race and they define people based on their race. And they say that those who have darker skin are hopelessly victims. They are victims of the world. They're victims of this country. They say that this country was born out of slavery, that it is systemically racist, and that those who are of darker skin or of color, they say, are to be forever unable, because of this institutionalized racism, to achieve in this country. They are always going to be victims. And they define those with white skin as privileged, who are different from those of darker skin, because they say that these people will always have a better break, will always be ahead of those who are of darker skin, because this country is irredeemably racist. Yet, ironically, they use racism as their method. And as a consequence, they really harm both white and black children fundamentally. They cause black children to feel as though they're hopeless, that there's no point in trying because they won't be able to succeed. They teach white children that no matter what you do, no matter how good you are as a person, you will never overcome your whiteness. You will always be privileged because of your whiteness. You will always necessarily carry guilt and shame because of your skin color. Now, this is a destructive doctrine. First of all, it's based on false history. We are not a systemically racist nation. We are a nation that is more integrated than virtually any other nation on earth. And we have achieved great things in overcoming any racism in this country. The vast majority, overwhelming majority of Americans are not racist. They don't determine one's worth based on one's skin color. And so this is a backward doctrine that tries to bring us back to an antebellum phase, where racism was predominant in this country. They want to reintroduce that. They want government to be replace the slave owner as the determining factor in your life. So if you hate yourself, they teach children to hate themselves, to hate each other, to hate the free enterprise system, which they say is systemically racist, and to hate government, which they say is systemically racist. They call on kids to tear down government. They want a revolution to take down the government of the United States. Now, what is BLM? BLM is one of the principal protagonists of critical race theory in the United States. What do they stand for? Well, BLM is a Marxist organization. They are communists. They want to replace the Republic of the United States with a communist government. They do it based on creating racial division. Marxism depends upon a division of classes. And in the Marxist sense, you had the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, the worker and the capitalist fighting one another. This was never true. Sure, we had unions, we had strife related to worker conditions, but we never had a universal situation where capital was intent on destroying labor. That would be self-destructive. And the movement overall is towards better working conditions. Well, because we have such an affluent society, the efforts to stoke Marxism based on class division really never worked in America. That's because we have such a thriving middle class in America. And as a result, they had to choose something else. And in the 70s, far left scholars in the law schools chose what they call critical theory. And that was to divide people based on race. They knew that they could succeed in dividing people based on race far better than they could in dividing people based on economic differences. So they chose to divide people based on race, and critical theory in the law schools uses the perception that every relationship in mankind is predicated upon racial differences, and that as a result, government must intervene in our everyday lives to order affairs, because otherwise we're hopelessly at each other's throats in a race-based struggle, a fight between whites and those of color. This then was developed by the 1619 Project of the New York Times and by BLM as a curricula to be given to everyone from preschool all the way through to college. And what they tried to do is to create revolutionaries out of students, to lead them to believe that the country is horrible, that they should hate America, that they should destroy it and replace it with this socialist utopia. Now, BLM does not believe in the nuclear family, for example. They subscribe to Marxist view that the nuclear family is oppressive. And so they believe that in order to eliminate the oppression that they say is inherent with the nuclear family, husband and wife, that we must destroy that relationship. And so they teach children to hate their own families. They teach children not only to hate each other based on race, but also to hate their own families. They teach them that every institution in society is systemically racist. And as a consequence, you can never succeed in having a non-racist society in America. So what they're trying to do is to destroy the United States. Their real objective is to destroy our country. And the sooner we realize that, the better, because we've got to root out critical race theory from our schools. We have to return to Martin Luther King's teachings. Martin Luther King was absolutely on target, and he understood that the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence was a promise to all Americans, regardless of race, that we would one day all be free. And indeed, the second paragraph defines for us the conditions of being an American. All men are created equal, meaning mankind, meaning women, men, people of all races. All are created equal by God. We are all equal at birth. There is absolutely no distinction to be made based on a superficial basis like skin color or eye color or hair color or whether or not you're a little bit heavier or a little bit skinnier. None of these things define your rights. Your rights are equal. We are all entitled to equal justice under law. So all men are created equal, endowed by what? Not by government, but by their creator, with certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is a gift of God to all, regardless of race. At birth, we all have these rights. And that was the intent of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. In addition, the Declaration makes clear in the second paragraph that our rights are the very purpose of government. That is, to protect our rights is the very purpose of the government. That if a government turns against us, like the critical race theory advocates say they want government to do, and give those of color certain privileges denied those who are white, and to punish those who are white and engage in reparations, even though people have not, our generation is obviously not one that enslaves or is enslaved, that died with the 13th Amendment. Nonetheless, they call for reparations, which is nothing more than wealth transfer. They call for equity, which is nothing more than socialist redistribution of wealth and privilege. We are a meritocracy. And the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence ensures that we are sovereign over government. Government is not to be our master. Ironically, they would create a universal slave owner in the government. The BLM would create government as the slave owner, dictating to us every aspect of our lives. Just look at any communist country. This is what they want here. And all the poverty and ruination and discrimination that takes place in a communist country, they would have that here. They envision themselves as on top of this heap. They're going to be the leaders. They're going to dictate to you what you do with your lives. And so it is universally discriminatory. They will discriminate against blacks and whites together because they will rule both. That's their intention. And you see this lack, you know, it's a fraud. BLM is a fraud. And the reason why it's a fraud is that it starts with this unassailable premise that Black lives matter. Of course they matter. And of course all lives matter, but they won't admit that. They become irate when you say all lives matter because they insist that no, Black lives matter. And what they're really saying is that Black lives matter to a greater degree than other lives. And that's contrary to our founding principles. We are all created equal, endowed by God with unalienable rights. And it is the duty of government to protect those rights, regardless of race, regardless of wealth, regardless of one's position in society. And we have fought both a civil war and fought against Jim Crow to destroy utterly this concept that people ought to be divided based on race, only to have these people re-inject race into the equation and insist on racism. So this is not where we want to go. This is not a future to progress and elevation of society. This is a downgrade to destruction and ruination of our society. This is a way to commit both political, economic, and personal suicide. It is a dead end. And what they want to do is drive us all into it because they intend on being on top of the rubble and running it from there on out. And the fraud of BLM is apparent because if they actually did care about Black lives, you would expect them to expend all the hundreds of millions of dollars they've received in resources to help people of color across the United States. They don't do that. They have taken the money themselves in various instances. Patrice Cullors was one of the two founders of BLM, has pocketed massive sums of money from these contributions, buying homes for herself. There are unaccounted for hundreds of millions that went into that organization. It is a fraud. It is a fraud on, and it is a deceit. And they're abusing people by leading people to believe that if they support Black Lives Matter, they are supporting Martin Luther King's goal of judging people not based on the content, not based on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character. They're precisely the opposite. They want people to judge people based on the color of their skin. And fundamentally, it's repulsive because our skin color is an absurd distinction. It has nothing to do with the content of our brains. Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, former HUD secretary, has frequently made the statement that when I, as a neurosurgeon, open the cranium of a person, I see the same brain mechanics and color in every person, regardless of what their physical color is. And his point is that the brain, that is our character, what we define ourselves with, what we do with our lives, is who we are. It's not our appearance. It's not our skin color. It's not our eye color. It's not our hair color. Those are all superficial distinctions. It's what we do with ourselves. And we ought to, in schools, be teaching kids to have that this is a meritocracy in America, that if you learn and achieve, and if you have talents in one way or another, and take advantage of those talents to help other people, you will succeed in America, and you will achieve great things. And, you know, we can go into this, and I'm talking too much, but you might ask the question about the history that they tell, because it's a gross lie and distortion of American history.
It really is. As I'm looking back and reading through the authoritarians, I mean, I got stuck on those presidents that really grasped that whole authoritarian concept. Authoritarian being, they're in control. Everybody else is subordinate. We are not an independent nation. It's taking away from the Declaration of Independence and our constitutional rights. And, you know, it just really, it gets me that, you know, there was a time where people came to this country, didn't matter what color their skin was, they came as indentured servants. And they worked to stay here. Yet there's still just that based on color of skin has to do with slavery. And when you look at who the slave owners were, it was not always those with light skin. I mean, from my understanding, from my readings, some of the biggest slave owners were of dark skinned also. And, you know, the presidents that started out as moderates moved into being progressives, really started wanting to control race. And for those that don't understand, moderate is more conservative, progressive, more liberal, democratic. Yet the people who are victims of slavery are continuing to be held in slavery by the same people they're voting into office. And it just blows me away that they're blinded to that. And how do we overcome that? How do we overcome that, Jonathan?
Well, we need to take a number of steps, one of which is to teach our children what the real history of America is, the good and the bad. And the reality is that we are an incredible people because we have overcome the bad and we are still fighting against the bad, but we are people that are driven towards achieving good things and great things, not just for ourselves, but for the world. And that has been our destiny from the very start. The whole purpose of the founding generation was to create this unique universe here of freedom, this incredible opportunity to limit government, to not have an oppressive state for the first time in world history, where individuals would be sovereign and they would be able to govern their own lives. They wouldn't be masked. They wouldn't be forced to be taking one drug or a vaccine. They wouldn't be compelled to behave in a certain way. They wouldn't be told from the moment they're born that you, because of your color, are going to be destined to fail. You, because of your color, are destined to succeed. They never were to be led by government. We were to lead, and the government was to follow. The government was to be our servant, not our master. That's what they intended for this country. And the founding fathers, they condemn, that is BLM and 1619 Project, they condemn these great people because they say, oh, they were slave owners. And they extract that element out of the picture. And they say, ah, because they were slave owners, everything they did is tainted. Everything they touched is ruined. Everything that they gave us, we should reject because they were slave owners. Now, how preposterous, but nonetheless, if you actually look into the real history, you find that everyone, every single one of the principal founding fathers of this country abhorred the institution of slavery. You find, for example, that all of them wanted a political solution. They intended at the time of the Constitutional Convention to achieve that. They intended for slavery to be gone from this country within 100 years. They wanted it to be obliterated. And indeed, as a reflection of their thinking, when Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, he included, along with that second paragraph that says all men are created equal, and that the BLM and 1619 Project have fraudulently said refers only to white men. He included in that same Declaration of Independence draft a provision in the listing of complaints against the Crown, 164-word paragraph that condemned George III for bringing slavery to America and said that all those of color in slavery were unjustly denied their rights, the very rights he defined in the second paragraph. And he condemned the institution of slavery. And this same condemnation was supported by James Madison, George Washington, and John Adams, and also was supported by Benjamin Franklin. Now, that 164-word paragraph was deleted at the request of Georgia and I believe South Carolina. But the reason why they accepted the deletion of it is telling as well. They were confronted with either having a basis for independence from England and the opportunity to have a free country or not. And so when that is the stake, you can deal with your internal problems.
Hold that thought. It's to go to a commercial, but we will be right back with Better by the Minute Life with Becca and Jonathan D. Ward. Jonathan, thank you so much for holding that thought. Please go ahead and continue.
but you cannot deal with your external problems of the oppression of the British crown and control over this country and the opportunity to be free. That was an urgent, immediate need that had to be dealt with in order for there to be any possibility that the institution of slavery would be destroyed here. And what happened with the founding fathers, they could not individually destroy the institution of slavery. It was an economic circumstance brought upon this country by the crown. And as a consequence, it grew here. They were in a position of advocating the institution be destroyed, but they had to have a political solution, because if individually they just let their slaves go, they would not only enter into bankruptcy because of the amount of money that they had invested in that labor, and because competition to them benefited from the economic advantage of slavery. So they would have to have decided for themselves, I'm not going to be a leader in the movement for freedom. I'm going to fall on my sword and die. I'm going to go into bankruptcy. And so it was the George Washington who abhorred slavery, didn't free the slaves at his death because Martha still was dependent upon that slave labor for the operation of Mount Vernon. But he scheduled for the manumission freedom of all the slaves that they had on Martha Washington's death. Thomas Jefferson manumitted the slaves at his death. And so it was that the founding fathers wanted a political solution that would cover every slave owner simultaneously. Everybody, the institution of slavery is over. All slaves are free. That's what they wanted. Then it comes to, well, is the institution of slavery exclusively a circumstance in which white people owned black slaves in America? And that's a false narrative too. The reality is, all the way back to 1619, where the 1619 Project gets its name, the reality is that when 20 black slaves came to this country as indentured servants, but they were really slaves, because the indentures of this time were entirely ridiculous. They did not really end ever. The indenture would allow a slave owner to determine whether the indentured servant performed ably or adequately. And if the owner thought that the person did not perform ably or adequately, then there would be no end to the indenture. So in reality, this was just slavery. And so 20 blacks came to the United States and were indentured servants in Easter of 1619 in the Jamestown colony. And they used that to say that America is systemically racist, that that's the real birth of America. What they don't tell you is that 4 months before that time, the Jamestown colony imported from the Bridewell area of England 100 white indentured servants who also were enslaved. And after the 20 people who were black came to this country and were indentured servants, that proved to be a one-off event in the Jamestown colony. And for years thereafter, the slaves were almost overwhelmingly in every year white, not black. And in addition, the idea that blacks were always slaves and they were never slave owners is false in American history. In that Jamestown colony itself, there was one slave named Andrew Johnson who was manumitted. He was black. And he became free, and he bought 200 acres of Virginia farmland. And he had about a dozen slaves himself that he used to work that property. Now, he was black and his slaves were black. And that's not one instance. All the way up to the 1830s, there were thousands of black slave owners in the United States. There were thousands of whites who were enslaved in the United States. Now, by the time of the Civil War, there were 4 million black slaves in the United States, 4 million. But there were thousands of white slaves in the United States. By the time of the Civil War, to give you an example of the ownership of blacks of other Blacks. In Louisiana, for example, Antoine Dubuclet was the largest slave owner by the time of the Civil War in Louisiana. He was Black, and he had over 200 Black slaves. So slavery is a horrible institution. It violates our fundamental principles in the Declaration of Independence. And that reality came to grips in the Civil War as a primary reason why we had the Civil War. And as a consequence, we fought a war to overcome that institution, and we succeeded in overcoming it. And then we had the Jim Crow laws, and we fought against the Jim Crow laws. And there's where Martin Luther King comes in. And you have this magnificent, prophetic, profound voice, brilliant genius, conveying to the world the fundamental precept that race has no bearing. Martin Luther King endorsed the Declaration of Independence. He supported the Constitution of the United States. He said that Blacks were the heirs to a freedom that they were denied. That's true. They were denied a freedom promised them in the Declaration of Independence. They were denied freedom equal to whites under the Constitution. And he fought to overcome that. And we largely succeeded in achieving it. And then comes along these people who are very self-interested in BLM and 1619 Project to reintroduce racism into this country, to revive Jim Crowism, to revive segregation, to make us a people who hate each other based on race. That is backward. That's as backward as taking a civilized human being from the 21st century and throwing them into the Neanderthal age. I mean, it's making us revert to primitive views. If you judge people based on race, you're an idiot. You are a fool because you are not giving credence to the person. The person is not defined by their skin color. It's defined by who they are, what they do with their lives. We need to be telling people of color in the grade schools, you want a solution. You have just as much opportunity as anybody else. In fact, if you use your talents, there's no limit to what you can achieve in the United States of America. We are a land of opportunity. And these teachers need to convey that. And then businesses need to convey that. And we all need to work for that. If there's talent, then bring it forward. Let's make this great nation a hugely prosperous country. Let's lower taxes. Let's free people. Let's not mask people. Let's not insist on them being vaccinated. Let's give them freedom of choice. Let's respect the individual's rights. And let's protect those rights equally. And let's have no limit to the achievements. And let's benefit all from those achievements. The great thing about free enterprise is that every person who succeeds in business does so because he benefits someone else who's willing to pay for that service. And if you are exceptional in any area, we want you to succeed in America. That's the message. If we had a leader as a president of the United States instead of somebody who has no brain between his ears, we would have him standing on the platform and saying to everybody in this country, critical race theory is a lie. Everybody in this nation can succeed. I'm here as president of the United States to enforce the laws that will knock down any barrier that's in your way based on this ridiculous concept of racism. We won't have a racist nation. We're going to have a great nation, and our great nation is going to be defined by the achievements of individuals. You are a free person. Use your freedom to your advantage. Become the greatest of whatever you want, whatever you do. And we will salute you because you're benefiting all of us. And that's the message that we need. That's the solution. The solution is leadership. Leadership in the right direction where individual rights are protected. And if they are protected, we will prosper. We always have when they've been protected. The greatest eras of American history have been those in which individuals have been allowed to flourish based on their freedom and achieve without limit. And we can have that again. And we cannot have it if we're going to buy into this BLM propaganda, which is the ruin of our country. Socialism and communism is the ruin of our nation. We cannot go there. And I think the American people are too smart for that. And I think they're rejecting it right now. And I think we have a great future, but we have to drive this, you know, we cannot have any remnant of this in our country. We need to drive it out of the marketplace. I'm all for free speech, but let the debate begin. Let's get to it. And let's have the leadership follow the law. Our laws prohibit the denial of equal protection of the law. We stand for the proposition that those who appear before a court, those who appear before government, are not to be judged based on their skin color. They're not to be given benefits based on their skin color. They're not to be given punishments based on their skin color. Skin color is irrelevant. It is irrelevant, and it has to be legally irrelevant. Otherwise, we will fall into this abyss of racism. The solution is we reject racism. Racism cannot be used to eliminate racism. We reject racism.
Period. Stop teaching it in schools. Hate is taught. It doesn't matter what the hate is. It is taught. I've seen it in young children. I mean, I've got a 23-year spread between my oldest and my youngest. What my oldest went through in school, there was so much love and cohesiveness. And now my youngest, I've pulled him out of public schools. They have to watch what they say, every single word, because it's going to offend somebody. Well, my son got offended all the time, yet reprimanded when he would want to say something. Even if it was saying something in love, there were consequences to that. It was just creating such a large division between people, which I abhorred because I have a family that includes many different races. And to have that being taught that somebody is better than another, or putting you down because your ancestors, because of the color of their skin, which is, like you said, incorrect history, and it's being taught through this critical race theory.
Well, you know, Becca, just irks me. When it's in the classroom, when you have an authority figure and the teacher doing it, that is child abuse, because there's nothing more precious than the hopes and dreams of a young child. And when you take a young child of color and you tell that child that you can't succeed in this country, and when you lead that child to hate this country, to hate even their own parents, and to think that their life is hopeless, you destroy that child. You create psychological scars that run deep. And that child abuse, we have got to prosecute, because we have to root out of the system teachers that do that to kids, because they are abusing those children. And likewise, when they try to put this load of guilt and shame on white children and say that, oh, your whiteness makes you privileged, and don't you feel guilty? And what are you going to do to reverse the fact that your skin makes you a oppressor? What are you going to do? This is child abuse. This is psychological abuse. And as a consequence, for teachers who do that, they should be prosecuted. And so I'm telling you, the laws need to change to face the new threat. The new threat is school systems working to create an abusive environment in which children's hopes and dreams are crushed, and they are led to believe that they cannot succeed in this country, or that if they are privileged and can succeed, that they will simply be feeding into a systemically racist world. That is not the real world. That is not America. And that is not what we should want for children. We want their hopes and dreams to be encouraged. We want them to be nourished in education, educated and not indoctrinated. We want them to have the freedom to express their views. We don't want them to be ridiculed. We want open debate. We want a tolerance to be taught of other people's opinions, and respect for other people's opinions. You may not like those opinions. Those opinions may be totally abhorrent to you, but that is why we have a free country, because someday your opinions may be viewed by the majority as abhorrent. And you may be a person who's victimized by others because of your views, but we need the law to protect you. And so individual rights need to be protected and respected. We've got this cancel culture environment in which any child who dares stand up and to say, the United States is not a racist country. The United States is a place of opportunity. There's no limit to the opportunities you can achieve in this country, regardless of race. If a child says that in a classroom, anywhere in this country, just about, child says that in a classroom, the child is going to be attacked. Attacked by the teacher, condemned by the teacher, the view's not going to be allowed in the classroom. This kind of intolerance is ruinous to education. You learn by being challenged in your views. You learn how to engage in analysis, how to be analytical in your thinking, and how to research and study and why you must do that in order to fortify your opinions, rather than just yelling down someone who says something you don't like. Why not understand what they're saying, what the reason is for them saying it, what the foundational facts are for their opinion, and then you draw a conclusion. And then if you wish to debate it, go right ahead. But don't yell down a speaker because you don't like what they have to say. If you don't like what they have to say, and it offends you to your core, you can leave. You can, but when it's in a classroom or in another organized educational environment, tolerance is what we should be teaching people. You know, little Joey, you raised your hand. What is your opinion? You know, we don't ask what is your opinion anymore unless it's a correct, politically correct opinion. But let's say little Joey is going to challenge the orthodoxy. Let little Joey speak. Require the class to be tolerant. Listen to what he has to say. And then, you know, if Sally over here disagrees and her hand is up, let her say why she disagrees. This is what America is. We are a land that respects individual rights and our freedom of choice. Otherwise, we have nothing.
Well, I think that their views are being based on incorrect teachings to start with. When it comes to history, how do we turn that around so that, yes, we can use history as a learning lesson to move forward, move away from the things that were abhorred, rather than continuing to be enslaved and enchained and continuing the victimology? And I look at other countries, you know, socialist countries and communist countries, and I think, why would we want to be like that? Why do we not want to have our freedoms? Why would we not want to have, you know, capitalism where you have talents, you put those talents to work for you to benefit others? As you said, you get paid for what you're benefiting somebody else from. In these other countries, that is being stifled and you're being limited as to what you can do, what you can make. Here we have so much opportunity, and that's what needs to be taught, using your character and your talents to be able to create a better community.
There's a lot of talk about environmental existential threats, but I'll tell you what is a real existential threat. The real existential threat is what they are doing to our children. And I'll tell you, parents need to have a central role in the education of their children. That is their right. They don't lose their parent status at the schoolyard gate. They don't have the state substitute for their parenting through a teacher who is an agent of the state. The schools are assuming control over every aspect of your child when your child is in a public school. That is wrong. The child is your child. The child's upbringing is your responsibility, and a teacher may not take it away. The teacher's job is to fairly present history, social studies, math, science, to fairly present that and to allow each child to be respected for his or her own views and to not be the answer as to what dogma or what political ideology is to be accepted. That is the ultimate determination of the child and the parent. And when it comes to gender issues, those are issues that the family should be dealing with, not the school. And when it comes to vaccination, those are health issues. And health issues are the province of the family, of the parents, not the school. Now, if the school has an emergency, of course, they would deal with a medical emergency in the school. But the point is that when it comes to basic life-affecting decisions about what your gender is, about what substances will be taken into your body, about what political views you will have, what religious views you will have, what your choice of spouse will be, that is not the role of a school. That's not the role of government, right? It is the role of the individual and their family and their church, but not the school, because the school then becomes an end-all be-all. It becomes a total controller. And what it does is it separates children from their parents. It causes children to go to a place where they are led to believe that they will have different direction and that they ought not listen to their parents if a teacher thinks otherwise. That is wrong. We don't lose our children when we send them to school. And that is what the parents in Loudoun County, Virginia are saying, and in different parts of the United States are saying, and that movement has to continue. And hopefully it will succeed in eliminating this ridiculous conception that a school is to replace a parent in the parent's entire role. And that's what these schools are doing. They are doing that. They're telling kids, look, when you tell kids that marriage is not between a man and a woman, but is between anybody, that's a religious concept. Marriage is a religious concept. The state should not be dictating what marriage means, and it shouldn't be requiring children to define what marriage means. Marriage is a religious concept. We have a separation of church and state, and the choice of what religious institution we go to and what religious viewpoint we have is our own. There is no universal state answer, because it's not appropriate to have the state dictate. Otherwise, it violates the separation of church and state. It violates our freedom of religion. When these are children in our own care, our religions are what our children's religions are. When they reach an age of majority and can have their own religion, they can go off and choose whatever they want. That's their legal right. But when there are children in the public schools and they're condemned because they're Christians, and they're lauded or supported or said to be exceptional if they're Muslims. I mean, this is what's actually happening. This is as outrageous as it is to define people based on race. You're discriminating against people based on their freedom of conscience guaranteed them by the Constitution of the United States. So what we need to do is educate teachers in good constitutional education of the basic rights and privileges of Americans. And they need to understand that they may not violate those rights. And they need to understand that it is their objective, should be, to teach true history, to teach the substance of math. You know, they want to define math as inherently discriminatory. They say that it's essentially a racist enterprise to learn the basics of mathematics. They say that Blacks disproportionately fail to comprehend mathematics. I think that is absolutely false, but it's a total ridiculous concept. And then to even say that is outrageous, but then to go on and say, oh, well, whatever answer you give to an equation is okay, because otherwise math is racist. Really? You've got to be an idiot to think that. You really do. But they do think that. There are whole school districts that have destroyed mathematics. There are whole school districts that have eliminated any schooling based on exceptional talent. So these schools that are designed for exceptional kids, they've wiped them out. And their argument is it's racist. Really? You mean to be intelligent is based on race? Is that what you're saying? What an outrageous violation of the rights of people of color to have an institution. You talk about institutional racism. That's institutional racism. To say that your children will never be able to go to that exceptional school, that magnet school that is for exceptional kids. No, because they can't. Their brains are tied to their skin color, and their skin color is a victimized skin color. So they'll never make it. They cannot learn. They can't learn because of their race. That is so oppressive. And that's the very far left ideology of authoritarianism that, you know, in my book, I explain existed all the way back to the antebellum South. It was that very thinking that justified the institution of slavery. I mean, just think, it's two steps from that to, oh, because you're of color and you can never succeed, you will always be doing hard labor. Okay, you'll be in the, you know, business of doing all those things that white people don't want to do. Why? Because, well, you can't learn. You can't succeed. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That's what these schools are doing to people.
Yeah.
It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. You know, my heart goes out to the teachers who really want to make a difference in the right direction. Yet because of the school districts, the states, the Department of Education as a whole, they are limiting them from being able to do what they intended to do. And they're giving them curriculum that is not building the individual at all. Jonathan, I thank you so much once again for joining me here. I look forward to our next interview that needs to be heard. We have been suppressed too long, and it's not the way that our founding fathers intended this country to be. Jonathan, thank you again so very much.
Thanks, Becca.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Better by the Minute Life with Becca. I trust this discussion brought confirmation and or clarity to what critical race theory really is and the history that gave it the twisted root to grow on. With this information, we hope that you will continue to be empowered as we together can end the racial divide that has been polluting our world. Follow Jonathan Emore on LinkedIn and townhall.com. You have been listening to Better by the Minute Life with Becca on KSCO 1080 AM Santa Cruz. Until next time, make each and every minute count towards a Better by the Minute Life.